Well, what a challenging book you've chosen to study this weekend. James is a book certainly not for just looking. James is a book for looking and for doing. And there's no escaping when you read the book of James. I found that I became more and more fascinated with James as a person. And in the introduction tonight, I just want to refresh your memory, because I'm sure that most of you know quite a lot about James, but just refresh your memory a little bit about James. Because here we see a man who reflected the image of Jesus. And the more I thought about that, the more I kept reading the book in the light of what I learned about him, the more impressed I was with this man. You know that this was probably the first book of the New Testament that was written. And I find it fascinating to think that so soon after Jesus ascended into heaven, the very first book that was written was such a practical one. That's interesting, isn't it? It was to do with how we get on with living. It's a book that isn't a deep theological treatise. Doesn't go in great steps into different great doctrines of the Bible. It's all to do with how you and I should live. And I can just imagine James as he began to unpack and process all that he had seen and heard through his life, and all the changes that came from when he put his trust in Jesus, that he then became concerned that those around him should start to live like Jesus too. And you can see too very strongly James's Jewish background. You can see how he brings the teachings of the Old Testament law and Jesus' teachings and the Sermon on the Mount, all of those magnificent things that Jesus taught, how he brings them together in this book and reinterprets them in the light of what it means to be a Christian. You know, this book is a very, very significant book for you and I to be reading today, I believe. It's a book for us to really get not only our minds around, but our hearts and our hands and our feet. It's a book that as we read it, we are challenged immediately to begin to live it. And when Helen wrote to me, she said, "This is a book for looking and doing." And that certainly is the case. It isn't, as James himself says, a book to just look into the mirror and examine very closely what you see. It's a book then to turn away and begin to do what you have, what you've seen in the Word. You know, Australia today, people are turning away in droves from Christianity. You just need to look at the census, at the Church Life Survey, to know that people are no longer being strongly attracted, people at large in our society, to the Christian gospel. Why is it? I remember after the September 11 event, I shall never forget one particular cartoon in the newspaper. It had two tables where people were selling things. One of them, there was American flags. The other one was mirrors. And when we look at what is happening in Australia today, you and I have to face up to the fact that what people see in us does not attract them to Christianity. And I believe that in this very, very critical time in our history, it is time to stop and take a good look and begin to live the truths we declare in a whole fresh way. They look at us and they make judgments of what Jesus is like. And they turn away and they're so desperately hungry. They're reaching out for crystals, they're hugging trees, they're shuffling tarot cards, they're entering into all kinds of strange and wonderful spirituality. Some of it is spirituality that has existed for centuries, like Hinduism and Buddhism and the Muslim faith, Aboriginal spirituality. Others are just making up their own. In fact, a few years ago I was in an airport in Santa Barbara in America, and there was this book on the bookshelf. I've given up my search for truth and I'm looking for a good fantasy. And really, if you move around in our society, those of you that work and you talk to people at work, and I know when I talk to people at various things that I go to, particularly with my husband, and you hear about the kind of spirituality they're reaching out to, you realize just how desperate people are. And it causes me to just cry to God and say, Lord, Lord, why are they not running to you in their desperate need? So I believe that this book that emphasizes so much and causes us to take stock of how we actually live is a very, very significant book for us to be looking at this time. You know, there's always debate among scholars about books that were written so long ago, but seems to be great agreement amongst many leading scholars that James was in fact Jesus' half-brother. So here was a man who had lived all of his life with Jesus. I'd say he was an authority on the way we should live, wouldn't you? In fact, to me, one of the most compelling evidences of the truth of the gospel has to be the testimony of James. Who knows you like your siblings? Who could tell the stories like your siblings? Your brothers and sisters, they are the ones who really know what we're like. They're the ones that can tell the tales, the things that we did that not even our parents knew about. Our brothers and sisters, oh goodness, what did you get up to? I see the look on her face. What did you get up to? And we have no idea exactly when James decided that Jesus was indeed the Messiah. Can you imagine what a thing that must have been to process? This older brother that he'd grown up with all of his life. And then the day came when he went off preaching around the countryside, and he had to begin to process what he was actually seeing and hearing. We know that James and his brothers and his sister didn't believe that Jesus was the Christ at first. You remember how they were rather embarrassed by the things that he got up to, and in fact wanted to just take him home and hide him away in the back room somewhere and not let him loose at one point. We know that part of the story. But we do know that by the day of Pentecost he had become a believer. It's recorded that in fact Jesus particularly appeared to him. He was one of the people that's particularly listed that Jesus appeared to after his resurrection. I wonder if that was the moment. Be marvellous to have been there and heard that conversation, wouldn't it? When he and James got together and started going back over things that had puzzled James, and there's many a conversation we wish we could have eavesdropped, isn't there, when we hear the Bible stories. I would have loved to have heard the conversation on the road to Emmaus, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that have been a great one to be walking along with the three of them that night? We know that he was married, and his ministry began immediately after the day of Pentecost. And you know that James succeeded Peter in leadership. So very, very quickly, he became a very prominent man in the whole of the early church. In fact, Paul, in the letters of the Galatians, calls him one of the pillars of the church. So here this man, who grew up day by day by day, seeing Jesus, hearing him, watching his actions and his reactions, and processing more and more as he then began to hear what he was preaching, he eventually was thoroughly convinced that Jesus was the Christ. And in fact, it's just beautiful, some of the descriptions in James that we have of the way he speaks about Jesus. And you will notice this as we go through the lovely ways in which he unashamedly declares that Jesus is the Christ. There is a strong tradition that in fact he was stoned to death. One book that I read said, on the order of Ananias, the high priest, he was stoned to death about a year before the end of the book of Acts. And in fact, in Acts 21, we find the last reference to James. He was known as a man of prayer. In fact, the tradition has that his nickname was Old Camel Knees. Is that something? Because his knees were so calloused from spending so much time in prayer. He was known as James the Just. He was known for his righteousness, that he was a man of integrity who lived a life that people recognized, this man is a man of God. And as I thought about that, I thought, isn't that interesting? His father, Joseph, the Bible describes as a righteous man. So he grew up in a house where he had a godly father. A father that it was so was chosen by God for such a unique job, such a unique position, to marry Mary and to be the father of the baby Jesus as he grew up, the earthly father. And as you read this book, you find that so often he uses very descriptive language. And I thought, yeah, the son of a carpenter would have a creative streak in him, wouldn't he? Carpenters are usually creative people. They know how to dream something and bring it into being as they build and work with their tools. And he uses so many powerful word images to illustrate what he wants to teach and to communicate to us. And as you read this book, you can discern the heart of a man who was so much like Jesus. I don't know whether you think very much about the authors as you read the books of the New Testament or even the Old Testament, and see what you can understand about what they are like. In this recent tragic events in Washington State of the sniper, you know, the things that have been happening, these two men that they've caught. I remember seeing one interview on television where they were analysing the kind of person he must be by the few notes they'd had from him. But isn't that interesting? I wonder what some archaeologist down in the years to come, what kind of person they'll decide you are by reading your diary or letters that you've written. It's interesting, isn't it, to read letters from the past and imagine what kind of person had written them. And this man writes in very strong, simple, straightforward ways. We have very little difficulty understanding what he's on about, exactly what he wants to talk to us about. And I can just see this dear, passionate Jewish man, steeped in the scriptures, filled to overflowing with wonder that Jesus, his own half-brother, was in fact the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of God, the Saviour for whom his people had been waiting so long. He, of course, as I said before, knew in intimate detail how a man of God should live, how a person of God should live. So he comes to us with great, great authority. He wrote this letter, right at the very introduction, it says, to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. And again, there's debate about whether just who he was speaking to, but I really believe he used that as a cryptic way of saying to the people of God, wherever they are. And the amazing thing is that this letter written so long ago is so vitally relevant to you and I in the 21st century. He wrote this letter to believers, those to whom God, as to use his own words, chose to give birth through the word of truth, that we might be the first fruits of all that he had created. So this is written for you and me, for us to take great care as we read. And not only study, I'm just overwhelmed with how much we know with our heads and how little we know in our experience and how little is unpacked in the way we live. I cannot imagine how your communities would change, how my community had changed, if the people in my congregation and you and the people in your congregations began to truly live like Jesus, the impact it would have in our societies. I tell you, it's time for a wake-up call, my sisters. It's time for us to get our act together. And the more I read James, I kept thinking of that Nike ad, just do it. What you see in the mirror, just do it. Let's really mean business with God and act upon what he has said. Here is a man who lived in the presence of God and interpreted the world around him in the light of what he knew and what he had seen and what he knew of how God, who God is and how he acts. It's very clear too that he was a keen discerner and observer of people. The way he so unerringly puts his finger on the situations that and the things that he saw that didn't measure up to the standard that he'd seen in Jesus. There were times when I was reading this when I thought, my goodness, did he watch the news this morning on the telly? Has he read today's newspaper? Because he so unerringly puts his finger on the way we are and the areas in our lives where we need to change. My sisters, this letter isn't primarily written to inform our minds. There's probably hardly a new thing that you will learn as you go through this book. In fact, I was tempted to just say, I'm just going to come here and just read bits of James and then you go away and let God sort it out in your life. I wondered whether we really need to sit and listen to this weekend, but whether we should all just get away with God with this book and do business with him. Because that's what this book is for. It's for you and I to do business with God. To begin to walk our talk, as the saying goes. So get ready for a journey this weekend that will stir your heart and challenge you to begin to live like Jesus. As we read this book, we not only hear the heart of James, the brother of Jesus, one of the pillars of the early church, but we also hear the heart of God longing for his people to be his people. It's time, my sisters, for us to take seriously the way God challenges us to live. I remember many years ago hearing a preacher say, how different are you to the people next door who don't know Jesus? How different are you in your attitudes, in your actions, in your reactions? And it's a very, very sobering thought. I pray that God will speak very powerfully to us this weekend, that we'll begin to choose, to make those choices, to begin to live like Jesus, to become blameless and pure children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, as Paul wrote, so that we might shine like stars in the universe as we hold out the word of life. My sisters, it's a critical time in our nation. You know, some of you are young enough to know that the children in school only know Jesus as a swear word. They know nothing of this book. The only stories from this book they have any idea of are some garbled television version of it. And I often think that when the present older generation, when we've all gone to be with the Lord, what will be left of the cultural memory in Australia of the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ? The way things are at the moment, I think very little. And it's a sobering thing to me that all of the churches in the book of Revelation are in modern day Turkey. That's a sobering thought, isn't it? And you know how hard it is to find a Christian in Turkey today. I know I've been pretty heavy about this, and I suppose Friday night's a night to be light and etc. But I just have such a serious sort of in my spirit as I think about where we are as a nation, the preciousness of the gospel, and the awesome responsibility that God has given us. So I commend the committee for choosing the book of James. But my sisters, it's not for the faint-hearted. It'll sort us out. Are you fair dinkum about being a follower of Jesus? Do you really mean it? Do I really mean it when I say, Jesus, you are Lord? Oh, let's come to this book with an attitude of a will, an attitude of heart ready to obey. To look in the mirror and not turn away and forget what we've seen, but look in the mirror and act upon it. God bless you. Trust I haven't terrified you. And But I've just enjoyed so much thinking about James. And as I've read the book, seeing the man who so passionately in love with Jesus and so convinced that he was the Christ and longed so much that those that claimed to be followers of Jesus would begin to look like him in the way they live. And I pray that we might, as a result of studying this book together, begin to look more like Jesus, to the glory of his name, that his kingdom might come on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.